This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora and welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Kia ora, Fred.
Good morning. Good morning. Sorry, I was daydreaming.
Hello. Yes. Not no gentleman.
I was dawdling and I was sort of...
Doodling.
And I've just been watching a thing this morning about storks coming back to the UK after they went... They've been missing for... since the 13th century or something, and they've just got them, some sort of, there's lots of storks, but these are particularly ones, and they've come back, and just because there's more efforts on some, in, what do you call it, environment.
Conservation.
Conservation.
I can already hear people complaining.
Oh, well, yeah.
So the storks always build their nests up on top of chimneys.
But they do bring the babies, so there will be a population explosion. Yeah.
Oh, that's a, I thought that was a myth.
Yeah. But there's a town in England, I forgot the name, I should have written it down, and it's not called Storksville, but it actually means Storksville in modern English. England. And they haven't had one there for so many hundred years, and now they've got a pair nesting. That's a nice story.
On the conservation front, yes, it is a nice story.
Yeah.
But the rest of it...
Apparently, about 1,500 storks have probably been hit by US and Israeli warplanes as they're flying around the skies, but that's another story.
I think they must go from... It must be Africa. From Africa, isn't
well,
it?
Well, a lot of birds are migratory, of course.
Yeah, but they migrate.
And it heads up to China. China does a lot of work on keeping... mudflats and coastal feeding places for the migratory birds, you know. Credit to them.
Yes. Well, probably as you probably heard on that just before on the brief thing about the weather.
A cyclone Vianu.
Vianu.
Yes, that'll be interesting. There's certainly a lot of precautions going on. And we should be cautious, of course. They're predicting that apparently it's offshore, but we'll still get affected by winds and potentially rain.
Well, hopefully people will notice there's high winds and don't put their garbage out.
Yeah.
The bins are curdled down the road.
Yeah, which happened a few years back. There was a dry high wind storm event on a Sunday. And, of course, people would put their bins out.
Because it's Sunday.
And there was a lot of bins being blown over. And okay, the bin blows over, but what's in the bin tends to come out.
And it goes everywhere.
So you just think of it. Think of your own self and your own section. Think of your city.
More prudent to put it out on Monday morning.
Yeah. Ask what. Not what you can do for yourself, but what you can do for your country.
So to speak. Yeah, I know. Yeah, so everybody has to batten down the hatches and tie down stuff that might potentially fly around.
Missiles.
Yeah. No, I went and did the gutters on Wednesday up the street in my little street, and I'll do the same. Keep an eye on them because it was still, unfortunately, we've still got the last of the autumn leaves coming down. So it doesn't take much to block them up, of course. Because they're sort of dry. You know, an autumn leaf is sort of a bit dry, so it doesn't slip between the grate. You just need a bit of a build-up. Next moment...
Overflow.
The water can't get through.
Our so-called neighbours across the road who always put their bins out middle of the week unnecessarily for 5 days, their gutters blocked up They never bother to
unblock it.
Unblock it.
No, and I get a bit.
If I've got a gumboot, I hadn't noticed that. I always scrape it clean so I can wash away.
Well, people moan about the council, but can't you? We as people, we can take some responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, if you see a piece of don't, oh, the council should pick that up. You can pick it up if you, especially if you go near a bin. You know, the same thing like the gutters. The same thing. You know, we can do stuff ourselves.
Yeah,
and we should. You know,
what you call community spirit or community whatever. What else you want to say? Yeah.
Well, I was expecting it's going to get a bit messy near where our shops are because those bins haven't been emptied for about 2 or 3 days and they're absolutely rammed. Garbage.
Well, and that's the other thing, of course, is you know,
cut back on.
There's contractors do it, and they only have to do it so many times or whatever. And then, of course, there's the other problem is that more people living in one house, so there's
generating more rubbish.
Generate more rubbish, and they're overflowed. You know,
yeah, that's the other issue.
It's a ripple effect of everything.
It's where the bin sizes became a bit of a debating subject.
Well, it was about conservation, and it is about conservation.
Yeah, we know that. You understand,
but of course, that's about conservation. But what we haven't realised is, say, we've got lots more people living per house in certain areas, and they're doing it for economic reasons or anything else. And so, there's plenty of rubbish per bin.
Yeah, the other one with the bin issue is when people have it empty and they just leave it out on the street for a while. And they also will become a potential missile.
Come
storm time, yeah.
Again, the neighbours across the road from where I live.
Just leave it out there, are you?
Well, visual pollution and the idea is your bin gets picked up and if someone's home, you put it back or get your neighbour to do it. You know, like the same thing. You can be neighbourly I often do it for the neighbour, especially if it's windy or the bins are starting to move, or I often just pull it back and put it into the start of a driveway somewhere out of so you can get a car past.
I do that when I'm on leave or something like that, and I bring the bin in. Oh, the neighbours put theirs out. I'll bring in their red litter bin as well. So I just park it by the side of the house.
And I often, with the neighbours in the street, if someone's got an overflowing bin, I go over and grab their top rubbish bag and stick it in mine because I just live on my own now. My kids come along and want some space. Or same thing with bottles. You know, just think about, you know, work together, folks. You know, it's just like, okay, we're...
You're thinking of that C word again, aren't you?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Collaboration.
Yeah.
Cooperation.
Or
community.
Community. All those community. C words.
So often that, to me, still would get around the burdening bins. You can bet your bottom dollar. They'll be in the street. There'll be some people who don't generate a lot of rubbish. Go and ask them if you've got a spare bin. And that most people go, yeah, sure, fine, you know. But still the idea is to minimise waste. But, yeah, sometimes they say lots of people can't help it.
No, they can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one incident with our yellow litter bin. Some cunning so-and-so dumped their, red litter bin rubbish into our yellow litter bin.
Oh, I've had that too. It does happen. I don't know if they think they've been smart or they just don't care.
What I did was I went, got the rubbish out and had a look, went through it and see if there was
some name and addresses.
No, there was only receipts for certain places. So there's no kind of link to a name.
You couldn't figure it out.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, yes.
And the silly thing is if they went and knocked on your door and said, oh, is it all right when the next rubbish, we could put some rubbish in your bin?
Yeah, well, that's...
You'd probably go, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, if I got any room, yeah.
Yeah, we tend to have plenty of room in our bins. We potentially, what we do at home is that we... You know how you put your bins out every second week? Sometimes we can put our yellow litter bin out within 6 weeks.
Yeah,
because that's how slow.
I'm the same. Yeah.
Red of the bin is a little bit different. Tends to be every 2 weeks. Yeah, but we don't have it full.
Well, and I put my bottle bin out. Not every time, but if I do, but often I see some of the neighbours have got their bins are so full. The truck driver comes along to pick them up to put them in the truck, and they tip out, smash. Well, he's not going to stop and pick up the
broken glass.
He hasn't got time. Mm. So I always usually go and take the tops out of them and stick them in my bin.
I think people find and get more in their garbage if they take the air out of the bags.
Yeah,
that's that too.
You can get a heck of a lot more in.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you've got a bag that's, a bin bag that's just full of air,
just poke it with a stick.
You've filled it up.
Yeah. And the same with the recycling boxes. Yeah. You know, just if you collapse your box, it can get a lot more cardboard in, you know.
I see a lot of that too. People are just too lazy just to fold it all up.
Push it
and put it in.
Yeah.
So there are mechanisms people can use to make it not so overflow. You know, not to overflow it. Eh?
We've
come up with some ideas.
Cool. Yeah, well, yeah. That's our community services nudge for this morning. Yeah,
get up your arse.
Yeah. One thing I just wrote in here. How is Orban doing?
Oh, in Hungary.
Oh, that's right.
The Hungarian election.
When is it?
Didn't Vance go over there and accuse the European Union of interfering with the Hungarian elections?
Yeah.
I see. When are the elections over there?
I think they're this weekend.
This weekend, I think.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
He's going for his... How long has he been in power?
16 years. He's
too long. He's going for number four, is it? Number four.
Yeah. And I think he's...
He's sort of a Winston Peters of the... he's gotten to power, I guess. He's just a nationalist and he doesn't want migrants and, fairly conservative, etc.,
Yeah, but he's running behind whoever...
Oh, yes. I can't remember the guy's name.
Research or something? I can't
remember. Peter.
Yeah, he's a bit more pro-EU. Yeah. Orban is, he's been, and I can sort of understand it, he's trying to tiptoe between the EU and America and Russia, because he is on the border there, but I think his time might be up. In the end, doesn't matter what, in the end people just go, time for a change.
Yeah, they were talking to people on the street as opposed to people in the clapper crowd.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we're not voting for him. That tended to be the message from...
Because he didn't get in by much last time, so it's definitely... The star could be waning.
Yeah. Time to hit the road, Jack.
Yeah.
But those sort of people always cling on.
Yes.
You have to boot them out.
Well, hang on, how old's Winston Peters?
80.
80. What's he doing in Parliament? Up and getting his pension, Oh, sorry, going over eat cucumber sandwiches with
Mario.
The United States. Yeah.
Well, that's right, he had a little sortie over there too, didn't he?
Yeah, that's the second time he's been there.
Yeah. And instead of telling America and Israel their friends, this war was, got to stop, don't do it,
Oh, yeah. What did he say?
We don't know what he said, but we can imagine it was mainly platitudes, knowing him.
There's, according to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I think it was, they've been doing a lot of work around da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't seem to see anything like that.
Well, New Zealand, let's face it, this latest atrocities of America and Israel attacking a nation at peace, it's atrocious. New Zealand should have come out and just said, we're an independent nation. This is wrong. Absolutely wrong.
Yeah, the only thing that in regard to the Iranian issue is our condemnation of the Iranian retaliatory action.
Yeah.
As opposed to the illegal war.
Yeah, like who attacked who.
Yeah.
The Iranians aren't supposed to defend themselves.
Yeah. And that's the bizarreness and the hypocrisy. It's like... There might be no noise about Iranian missiles that are retaliating from an attack, the noise should be about who attacked who.
Yeah, the Iranians are attacking civilian targets. Aren't the Americans and Israelis attacking civilian targets?
Well, they bombed a school, didn't they?
How many civilians have died in all this?
They said 1,400 plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least, and then now Lebanon, of course. Has been had a, the Israelis have just blatantly attacked.
Yeah,
it's Lebanon.
It was a Druze quarter, apparently. Apparently, Hezbollah were there, but I don't.
The Israelis are sitting getting a bloody nose in Lebanon, though.
Militarily, but
hasn't gone all the way.
No, you talk about that. Had those bloody tanks, for example. We talked about it before.
But they'll still win. In the end, Israel is a powerful military force.
Unless the tap is turned
America.
Off.
Unless the tap's turned off.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, America's still having the conversation. But of course, as I say, and I've said this before, the evangelical, the Christian Zionist movement, is the Israeli lobby, whatever you want to call it, is very strong in America. And they're starting to question it. But the store, I noticed they're still getting, it might change, but it's not going to happen overnight, you know?
Yeah.
They still think they're going to sit on the right-hand side of God, do they?
Well, it's still end of times and you know, Israel can do no wrong. Because, you know, it all comes back from Bible belief and all this and interpretations, et cetera. But, for these modern times.
It skewed the Bible, though.
Well, there's First Testament and Second Testament.
And that sort of stuff.
It's a matter of interpretation.
I think that's probably more like it.
Yeah.
What they choose to see and what they choose to
read. Well, and it's like any book. You can choose any words out of something, can't you? You know, statistics or Bibles. It says in here, verse 11, you know?
You don't take it in its entirety.
Well, who wrote the Bible?
Individuals, not God.
Political agenda.
It might have, but which tribe were they from? You know, all that sort of thing comes in. Just because someone writes something down doesn't necessarily mean it's the truth.
They say it's the word of God.
People believe it.
Of course they do. And I've had this argument with someone who said, you know, the Bible's written by God. And I said,
No,
it was written by people. And it was an assessment of people's. A lot of it was genealogy. A lot of it was all sorts of, but a lot of it's opinion, you know.
Yeah.
And okay, the purpose, maybe the general purpose was, we call it a Christian thing. Well, for a Christian thing, Ten Commandments. What are you doing stealing land? What are you doing killing people? What are you doing, all this sort of thing.
It's under the heading of political expediency.
And you choose to believe. Well, and it's like, go back to wars. You know, priests on both sides who say they worship the same God, etc., are both exhorting their troops to go and kill the other side.
Yeah.
They're both Christians, you know. Yeah.
Well, Constantine had that grand synod with all those bishops.
Yeah.
Various Christian sects, because in those days travel was so far that different sects had different interpretations.
Mm.
He made them stay there till they came up with a standardised version of what was acceptable.
Acceptable.
Anything else was blasphemy.
Yeah.
Synods, eh? Yeah.
And
it's back to politics. It's politics.
Well, there's politics and religion. Lots of politics. Factions. And Christianity and all that.
So you've got these Christian evangelical types and their what they talk about.
End times.
And they say... And you always talk about the Ten Commandments. And you've got false prophet. Oh, but you idolise money, for example. Yeah. You shall not commit adultery. It's called something else.
Yeah.
Oh, but you got something like Hegseth going on about Christian Zionism, and he's a bloody philanderer.
Well, false idols, tattoos can be considered.
False idols, yes.
You know, there's a lot of...
Hypocrisy, to be frank.
To be fair, I've thought a little bit about it, and even for myself, it's sort of, with what's gone on in the world, especially in the last, you know, little while, that has been more highlighted, is if you were a good Christian or a good person of faith, it would rattle you, that faith, of all the nastiness and awfulness that's going on.
Yeah. Well, but another faction, I was talking to one of my chips I see with age concern, he said he gets a visit from a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
And everything that's going on is, it's their fault because they're not Christian.
Yeah, right.
So that just covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it? A cop-out.
Like you said before, it's political. It's all part of human political interpretation.
All part of God's plan.
Yeah.
Have you actually seen his plan? Or her plan.
Well, they still spout this stuff.
I know.
It's all part of God's plan. What?
Yeah.
What is it? God's plan could only have been written by a person or several people, not just by a thing that we call God.
Well, and of course, you know, go back to, you know, when all these assorted writings were being assembled, you know, there wasn't air travel. They couldn't have a hooey all the time to come up with a standard. But you lived in your valley and you were the local priest or what do you call it? Tuhunga or whatever.
That's where interpretation came in.
Of course it came.
Because each little sect had their own take on what was important.
Yeah.
That's why you get back to Constantine. No, you've got to have a standardised...
Theology. And you can understand it. In one valley, they said, you ought to stand on one foot while you have a wee, and the left foot, and another valley, they sort of got to mix that up, and you've got to stand on your right foot and poke yourself, stick in the eye. You know, all that.
Because
made jest of it, but it's actually sort of how things
and again, we get have evolved. Back. Political expediency.
Yeah. Oh, and then people use it.
Yeah. And exploit it and all the rest of it.
And we're not, you know, let's face it, look at the English history, which, you know, a lot of us derive from, you know, and all the users of the... Of the, you know, when the, which king got rid of all the monasteries and all that, to get out of a few marriages and stuff like that.
Kill a few people.
And so there's been some pretty awful, not just pretty, there's been an awful lot of stuff done.
In the name of religion.
Name of religion.
Yeah, and this is just a carry on.
Yeah.
Just seeing those fools, because old Trump's got a pastor.
Mrs. White.
Some nut job. From somewhere, Mrs. White, something he said. I think, and he says that she was almost comparing old Trump to Jesus Christ, and that's
She was.
How sycophantic can you be?
Well, it makes you cringe.
But
a lot of things about America make you cringe. You think, and that's what I'm so nervous about. Even having a go at Trump, fair enough. But the Democrats are backing this war in Iran too. A lot of them. Yeah.
Trump would love the accolade being compared to
JC,
John Cleese.
Yeah. I remember a few years back he was the King of Israel or something. You know, Bibi was.
Oh, he's the Messiah.
And he just lapped it up.
He claims he's got a brain the size of a planet.
I think it was something else. I think it's a bit of dust.
So, you know, it's but Americans, it's still hard to get your head round.
Well, it's not just in America, it's the UK as well. I've got them all over the place.
In this country,
We have. The inability to keep an open mind and to look for veracity of articles and comments and,
learn
a bit of history.
Collaboration and maybe we can get ourselves out of this mess.
The word veracity, and that also applies to the Bible.
Well, yeah, it applies to India.
But in light of these fundamentalist types, the veracity, that word veracity applies to
the Veda scriptures. Is it Hindu, isn't it? Veda?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
They've got their own scriptures and that sort of, and the interpretation is what is okay and what it isn't.
And of course,
that's been exploited towards being anti-Muslim
and all
the rest of it. And you've got the Buddhists in Myanmar.
Yeah. There's been some awful stuff done. And is still going to be done.
In the name of religious right-wing nutcases.
They get extreme, they're fundamental.
And there's money usually floating around
usually a bit like that.
I don't know, maybe I'm old fool, an old fool as well, you know, old school, is that, you know, I always thought that to be a priest or a minister or a pastor or whatever, you should live a simple life and care about your flock and not live in a big house and driving a Mercedes
or
have a choose who you want to have fun with in the congregation, you know, and but it seems to be, what do they call it? It's prosperity gospel stuff. It's okay to have all this wealth and adorn yourself with trappings of wealth, and that's okay. To me, that's not what I believe. Not just Christianity, but any decent faith should be about humbleness and about purity of goodness. You know,
none of them like the word austerity.
Look at Gandhi would go around in a simple cloth and all that. You know, people don't like that.
Don't like it at all.
Because I think it's...
And it's taken out by a Hindu.
Yeah.
An extreme one too.
Yeah. Who was the old guy in... speaking of guys, he's just died, not recently, but he was a leader of a country and used to drive around in a Volkswagen and just lived in a little house.
The Uruguayan leader.
And they cried when he died because he was just...
He lived a very simple life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He generally was one of the people. Yeah. And he'd refuse when they offered him bigger houses and all.
It's a simple, you know, it was a simple home. Yeah,
there's only my wife and I at home, you know, sort of thing. So yeah,
you need more of those.
But there's a big machine underneath it. You can't have a simple leader because then you can't justify if you're second or third in line or in charge. Then you can't justify your big salary and your big car, which is not quite as big as the leader, but it's pretty close.
Yeah,
you know, so there's a lot. It's like it's like a wave pushing behind you. You can't
self-aggrandisement.
That's the word.
Yeah, so we're still very much into that sort of.
Just shows you how pathetic we are, isn't it?
As human race.
How shallow we are. Mm. Yeah, would be what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's that, as you say, where's that, you said the minister and his flock and the just a simple life. Yeah. So I think the old.
Well, and they got caught up in this glory to God. And let's face it, we're not just talking about Christians.
Who are generally quite humble and
absolutely.
Their little community or parish, whatever, and they do a good job. But it's the ones that don't that gets all the attention.
Is it Paula White, the White House?
Paula White, she's White something, or White.
And she's White the pastor, Rush. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's embarrassing, but.
Anointing him and
I think they must have had their cringe gland removed.
America.
That's why they don't cringe.
I've
got an oversensitive cringe gland.
Yeah, me too. Maybe that's. Yeah, but it's like they call it American exceptionalism
It's just an invitation for greed.
We call it cringe. You know, it just makes you cringe. But it's not just a few. You know,
it's a many.
Americans just have this.
And as you said before, we've got some over here as well, all over the place. Yeah.
Even in the government,
we'd call it narcissistic and up yourself. And,
thinking it's being American. That's what being an American's all about. Gunfight at the OK Corral, and when you finish that.
Very loud and
brash,
and sure, there's not all by any means.
Interesting, the ones I've met overseas, I've seen the light when they've left the country and then look back what's going on, then they realise why some of the world doesn't actually like them.
They're in your
face, they're in your ear.
Yeah, I found over that, here, oversexed.
Yeah.
Well, do you know that there's a story of the riot of Manor Street in Wellington during the war?
That's right. Yeah.
And I think the UK had a similar example, but I think it was someone in Lancaster during the war.
And the Aussies had one
Sydney
up in
Street.
No, not Sydney Street. During the Second World War. Manor Street happened during the Second World War when we had when the US soldiers. Tried to ban Maori from going into a bar.
Yeah,
and it started a big riot.
I think I came across that. During
they had
the
a
week.
Similar one up in Australia
There's
too.
There's a book that's just been released. Talks about this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there was.
I told the book was come over here and you'll be dead or something. You know, we'll kill you. And it's about the Americans involving themselves in local politics and race relations.
Yeah, there was from the UK. There was a story about during the war, and it was sort of an information that was released that we have no racism here. Da 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 da. And there must have been a war camp or US camp up in Lancaster somewhere, and they the locals they got on well with the Afro American troops. And the military police didn't like that.
Mm. Oh, fraternising.
Yeah, what ended up was a major battle between Afro-American troops and the military police, because the Afro-American troops got their hands on guns.
Oh, okay.
But as the outcome was that one Afro-American soldier died in the fight. But the locals kind of protected them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there would have been, the UK, racism in the UK, like America?
Course. Yeah. Cool.
In those times still? They would have been blacks? They would have been black?
No dogs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That was the mentality.
Okay.
And when you talk about, there was also, from the First World War, the similar kind of racist behaviour went towards, I don't know where the soldiers were from, but the Australians were the instigators, and this was in Wales during the First World War.
Yeah. Well, look at our own infamous moment over in Egypt or Israel, it is now Israel, where someone got some soldier went into an Arab village and might have got killed or something.
Had something stolen.
Something stolen, and it ended up our troops went in and we killed quite a few, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 21st Battalion was involved in that.
And all on supremacy and racist values, it seems to be.
Yeah. So. How I know, I was told that story at Varsity and My grandfather was part of the 21st Battalion too, so, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like the glorification, you know, of war. I don't like it, at all.
Oh, no, I don't like it either. I follow the history of it. That's all I'm fine.
Yeah, and there always, sadly, there looks like there's always going to be wars, it's always a dangerous thing when we start glorifying, you know.
Yeah, because they talked about...
the heroics of war.
Heroics. They always talked about the Richard the Lionheart. We go back to the Crusades, this time the Third Crusades, how he's deemed to be this hero king. Mm. But what he did to the prisoners at Acre, yeah. Would put a different light on it.
Yeah.
Bloody well, beheaded a lot of them, basically. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, Christian Crusaders. Is that?
Yeah. No, it's a real nasty carry on. Yeah.
So, yes.
And it carries on to this day.
It's a big subject, but it's always be... That's the same thing about we're talking about, you know, be careful what you read and what you believe. Just check it out with some other...
you wish for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And take get the story from the other side's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of saying, you have all these heroes from you when you're taught history at a lower level. Got all these heroes of English history. That's the one I'm more familiar with. But then just read a little bit more deeper into the subject.
Yeah.
And you find out what these people really like.
Well, and I say the victor tends to, what's the old saying about the victor writes the history?
Yeah,
history.
Yeah. Even they talk about, you know, Henry V and Agincourt. Mm. He wasn't a pleasant person.
Yeah. None of them were.
They, history paints them like that. You're taught it, but no, definitely not.
Yeah, well, you often see that, you know, big people who've got big names and are famous and all that, and, you know, they have big funerals and all that.
Well, he certainly wasn't up for discussion.
How nice are people with it?
He certainly wasn't up for discussion at school. We didn't discuss the less savoury parts of some of these people.
Yeah, we don't.
It was all the heroics and all the, they did this and they did that, and because of that we've got this and blah.
Oh, you're
just kind of whitewash.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was quite unpleasant, to be frank.
Yeah. Those without sin cast the first stone.
Yeah. There'd be plenty of people holding onto their stone.
There wouldn't be many. You wouldn't think there'd be many. Myself included.
Me too.
Yeah, that's why they say that only the children are innocent, you know, unless you're from Israel and then they're going to grow up to be adults, so they're... That for your game.
But even then, unfortunately, those kids aren't seen as innocent because they're born of, you know.
Yeah.
They're doomed from the moment they their first squawk.
Yeah.
And it's like this guilt complex, this guilt trip they keep blowing on people.
Okay. What do you got there, Mick? What else
I've got one.
Actually, I'm reporting back on, we've talked about it several times, the Otara Papeterite local board election.
Oh, yeah.
They've had it.
They'll be right.
They've had the re-election,
and the same result.
Similar, but just to tell people what happened is they had an election, we knew where the other council elections were on, and then one candidate lost out, and so he did a bit of private investigation, and in the end got enough information, and they'd found out that a lot of people who, wouldn't say a lot of people, several, more than several, dozens of people had said they never got their voting papers, and it turned out they went and inquired, and they had voted. Technically, but of course they hadn't. So a judge, judges said, no, there's too much skullduggery on here. They couldn't find out who did it. Police had a look at it.
Of a suspicion.
So he ordered a revote, and they've just had that this weekend.
Okay, so what was the result?
And the result is the guy that brought the complaint, his name was Vi Hosier. He was a Labour, on the Labour list. He came first with 2,858 votes. But the other three, there was four vacancies. The other three were the same from the same party that won it under the questionable election. So that's interesting. So they
has the result been accepted by all parties?
Yeah, well, the official results are out.
Yeah, but I mean
because
sour grapes from the ones you lost out this time.
No, well, the same ones got in.
Right.
Out of four were the ones that got voted. In the last elections. Okay, so and the other guy who missed out from the Papeterite Otara Action Team, which is the group that had a landslide last time, Only one of them didn't get in, and he was still, I think he was still sixth or seventh.
Right.
But there were 19 candidates, and how they knew there was something up is all the other voting turnouts were really low in Auckland and around the country, of course. Yep. But this Papatauri Otara one was really sort of a blip of people participating. A
huge spike.
So the reality is this election that was back to normality of poor voter turnout. Right. So yeah, so 19, but there was 19 candidates. So you know, a lot of vying for the positions. So yeah.
And just remind me, this is for a local council?
Yeah, just the local board, basically. Yeah. We used to have them. They used to be everywhere, and Auckland's got a few.
Community boards, yeah. I think some of your rural areas.
We used to have them up north, but they got rid of them now. But, so that's the news there. So it's been done. 3 out of 4 got returned regardless of that.
And his name was Vi, isn't it? V-A-I, isn't it?
Yeah, V-I-O. And Hosier's last name, H A U S I A. So yeah, so that's interesting. So they still got back in basically.
Yeah, but the Labour man came first. So that was made very obvious. That he was a Labour person.
Yeah, yeah, they stood on tickets up there. So
I understand. Yeah, so that's.
Yeah, so that was the one that I wanted to report back on.
That's a good result.
Yeah, well, it was good that they had. I'm pleased that. You know, it was the right thing to do to have a revote. Because the 3 out of 4 got returned anyway, but at least it was obviously there would have been a lot more scrutiny about it.
So deemed a fair result.
Yeah.
That's good.
Because actually the guy said he wanted, this guy Hosier said, we should be getting away with male voting. So it should be. Because of that, he's still not a fan.
I could kind of understand what he's saying, eh?
It could well happen in other areas, or have happened, that, you know, a block of flats, there's 14 envelopes stuck in the mailboxes, and people aren't interested. Someone could easily pay a few kids to go along and pick out a whole lot of. Because they stand out like dog's paw too. They've got them, you know, the voting papers are always in the orange and white envelope.
Yeah, they're like this, aren't they? They're always like this.
But I still have some misgivings about electronic.
No, he wasn't a fan for necessarily of electronic. He just said it should be walk-in voting.
On the day,
or a period of time. Yeah, that was his.
That would be more acceptable, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, male voting is this problem. Papatauri one,
but anyway,
could replicate somewhere in other places.
That's what's happened.
Good.
Yeah,
I'm happy with
so
that.
So he's been vindicated, of course, because he didn't get in last. That's why he thought he'd been doing a reasonable job without blowing his nose. And been polite. And
Trumpist.
Yeah. And so that's what made him suspicious. He thought, "What have I done wrong?" sort of thing, and then started to have a decent look at it. And talk to a few people.
Good on him.
Yeah, good on him for following him through. Yeah.
Not just for his own personal gain, but good on him for democracy.
He may have run up against a few Labour types who supporters who may have.
But you imagine going in and checking that you want to know why you haven't got a voting paper and said, madam, you've already voted.
That would be.
You'd be.
No, I don't think so.
It shows you the fallacy in the, the weakness in the system. Because it could have happened. It could happen a lot, and we don't know about it because most people don't care. If only 25% the chances are that means 1 in 3 out of 4 envelopes you take, you've got a good chance, unless you're in wealthy areas, etc. you've got a good chance. You go into a poor area, you could grab an awful lot of envelopes without anyone saying anything. Is that fair comment?
It's just falling on the ground. I'll just pick it up.
Yeah.
I'll just pick that litter up.
Yeah. And you could go in, the guys have been a pamphlet deliverer, and rather than putting something in, you take it out.
After our own local elections, like the number of times I walked past places, there was still ballot paper envelopes sitting in mailboxes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is days after supposedly been done and dusted.
Yeah.
But it hasn't, eh? So.
Yeah. And the other way of doing it, of course, would be have a. A little bit of a reward for wherever the paper recyclers go.
Yes, it's very much so.
How corruption sneaks in.
Well, on the election front.
Yeah.
Well, I got this in the mail, Nicola and myself, actually, mm-hmm. about the General Roll versus the
Motor Roll.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, so I got one too, actually.
If you would like to change the roll you are on before the election, you need to do it by midnight, Thursday the 6th of August.
Okay, yeah, a bit of time.
Yeah, yeah, so I have made up my mind anyway. I'm just going to stay where I am.
Yeah. Well, under MMP, our votes do count. You know, generally.
Yep. So I'll just stay where I am.
Yeah.
Very happy with where I am currently.
Yeah.
Particularly with the choices you got for Hamilton West.
Yeah.
Or I think the lack of choice. Although I hear murmurings that Louise Hutt could be potentially standing for the Greens in this area.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Louise.
Yeah. Well, so have I.
And as a working council, she was a real worker, and it was, you know, a disappointment that she didn't get voted back in.
She actually did
the work, you know, read the paperwork, read all that, so, you know.
Yeah, that was a dirty, low-down trick driven by a few.
Well, whether it was a trick or not.
I think it was. I think after what I heard at Meet the Candidates that day, I think, very much.
And it's hard. Let's face it. Let's be real. With a low turnout, it's very hard for left-wing green alternative candidates to get voted in.
Yeah, but
very hard.
Yeah. But you don't make those sort of comments about violence towards candidates.
But anyway, good luck to her.
Good luck to her, very much so. But I'm going to remain in the Maori electorate. So,
So what else?
What else you got there? What have you got there?
Well, I've got bits and pieces this week, but one article. This is on yesterday's paper. New Zealand's waterways getting worse. We've talked about this before. Sobin report shines a light on the condition of our rivers, lakes, wetlands, and aquifers. It's pretty bleak. The water quality monitor in the Hutt River, Te Awa Kairangi, the new report says the health of a large part of the country's freshwater network is deteriorating. And Waikato University Associate Professor in Biodiversity and Ecology, Nicholas Ling, said that although there have been improvements, most parameters showed either little gains or worsening of conditions. Today's release of the latest report on the state of our freshwater makes a sober reading. Of particular concern is continued significant deterioration of the state of our lakes, wetlands and groundwaters. And Forrest Bird go on to say that Forrest Bird said the report has shown that New Zealand's freshwater was at a breaking point with polluted rivers, unsafe swimming spots and contaminated groundwater, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
In the same week,
the
UN has just come out with a report saying this is climate change and pollution. This is by Kavi Mandani, who's the director of the UNU Institute for Water. And the article starts off with the headlines, "World has entered era of water bankruptcy," UN report. It's basically about the quality of the water, potable water, on the planet. And the implication it has for populations and the environment.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. We talked about this in conjunction with the proposed three waters.
And let's go back. We've got the cyclone Rianu approaching, which could bring large rainfall. And say, where does all this water end up? It flushes all the cow shit ponds and it flushes the sewage ponds in the cities and everything.
It all ends up in the sea.
Yeah, and it goes down the rivers and all
down
that.
Down in the lakes,
The answer really is what we put in, what we're allowed to use and buy and purchase and all that, but it's also having enough swamps to act as a sieve rather than just straight into the rivers. And
it was in some places where they eased off now, but it was some place up in Auckland where they had residents were advised to boil their water.
Well,
I came back from Taranaki, you know, and went on my sojourn down there a couple of weekends ago. And we Tongariro, lovely, you know, it was picture postcard, bush and sea, sun, you know, a few Israeli tourists, but that was a blight. But never mind. Apart from that,
was a blight.
And then there's a sign at Uruanui, and I think Tongariro don't swim, you know, pollution signs. You know, he said, "Whoa."
And what's the country doing about cleaning it up?
Well, we'd be doing anything. Yeah.
Wasn't the whole idea of Three Waters to work towards cleaner water? Potable water?
But we didn't like that because of Mary's.
They would take the water.
They scuppered that. And I don't think they're doing anything, are
they? Well, they are, but they've just. Yeah.
Excuse the pun, but it's just been watered down.
Yes.
But, you know, let's face it, if New Zealand's population,
Well, the highlight is the crisis come from land use, contamination, water abstraction, climate change, our water, and the quality and movement of water across rivers, lakes, wetlands, and aquifers.
Yeah.
The 998 groundwater monitoring sites, 45% had E. coli concentrations above the maximum acceptable
level. That's in New Zealand.
In New Zealand. Yeah. For drinking water, at least once between 2019 and 2024, and 12% had nitrate levels above acceptable levels at least once. Improvements were reported in other areas, including phosphorus levels in rivers and lakes, and the visual clarity of most monitored river. Together, the updating indicators show that while some aspects of freshwater quality and ecosystem health are good, improvement, others are deteriorating. Mm. Nitrate levels have also worsened at more groundwater sites. And it goes on and on and on. So the quality of water is now questionable.
Well, intensification of populations, whether it's cows or humans.
And the infrastructure hasn't kept up with.
Yeah, that's the issue. We come back to
infrastructure.
We keep banging on about the infrastructure again and again.
Right. And there's things, see, that's the pity is that we know there's things that we could do, but then the voting public won't support.
Yeah.
Parties that do it enough so they can
so make. So there'd be no political will from the party to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Because they're all right. Because some of those members, coincidentally, putting members of the government, live in nice little areas where their water supply isn't.
Well, they're living at a nice beach suburb. They're not living at Port Waikato.
But their water supply is not contaminated. They're living where their water supply is not contaminated.
Yeah.
Down the road, but somewhere.
There are three farms that they've got putting crap into the rivers, you know, but they've got a nice place at the beach.
Yeah.
I'm simplifying, but, you know.
They're talking about water. They were wanting to return that dam to the Hawke's Bay.
Okay.
You know, did you hear that story, that one that went to the High Court and it was stopped about 10 years ago?
Yeah, they have another go.
Yes, and it's been promoted by an ACT MP.
To build a dam down there.
Yeah, they had a campaign to stop it being put in, and I think they won.
That's the other thing, because if you keep building hydro dams, it swallows up large acres of farmland.
Which
they need for cattle and for growing crops.
But what we actually need to do, we actually need as much land and you know. Our waste is terrible with food and everything else. We could have a lot more land that's marginal that could go back into swamps. You know, we've got bushland, but what we're really short of is swamps and things that sieve.
Nitrates and stuff like that, yeah. But they're doing some things like that.
It seems to be piecemeal.
Yeah, they did. There was one that I think down the South Island they were doing.
Yeah.
It needs a concerted national effort.
Yeah. Bipartisan? Yeah. Bipartisan. I know that sounds.
Collectivism.
I'm being really collective today. I don't know.
And there was also these getting rid of what do you call it? Introduced fish species. Koi carp.
Yeah.
And all that sort of
stuff.
They're
a pest, aren't they?
Yeah. So they were zapping them some way, and then they would be cut up for blade fertilizer.
The doom and gloom continues. It's really hard to find something meaningfully possible, but just you've probably come across this, Craig. Waikato households struggling for food. The region tops New Zealand for food insecurity as the cost of living bites.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, the New Zealand Hunger Monitor 2025, released by the New Zealand Food Network, shows 40% of Waikato households are food insecure, significantly higher than the national average of 33%. While levels of food insecurity are broadly consistent across all regions of our territory in New Zealand, Waikato has a significantly larger proportion of food insecure households compared to the national average.
That's interesting.
Which is interesting why the demographics should have an impact, but I guess as they're represented in other surveys, probably disproportionately represented by Maori and Pacific Islanders and poor Europeans.
Yeah,
the report based on a survey of 3,000 New Zealanders paints a stark picture of rising hardship, especially coupled with what's going on in the Far East, or the Middle East, and all those headaches. Paints a stark picture for rising hardship, with many families struggling to afford enough food amid high living costs and financial pressure. 68% of food insecure households said their difficulties affording food began within the last 12 months. It goes on and on and on.
And we're a food rich country. That's what.
Well, that's it. We're a rich country.
But I'm just going about the food part of it. Food rich. This was mentioned. There's another article on stuff that we mentioned.
I think that ties in with a report we did, I think, last week or the week before, with kids predominantly living in food insecure households.
My manager at work is the chairperson for the Christian Food Bank, and there's an article about the same subject matter on Stuff, and it was dated today. Because I think because Mike Rolton's name was also mentioned in relation to this.
Well, the problem doesn't seem to be going. It seems to be getting worse.
Exacerbated, It's not just beneficiaries and those low income. It's now become the
It's gradually filtering up. The bottom end of the so-called middle class, they'll start to feel the pinch as well.
Pensioners, middle earners, and all that sort of stuff.
The ripple, we haven't, you know.
We've seen nothing. It's going to, even if the war in Iran or in the Middle East stopped now, it's going to take 6 months before those gains will start filtering through the system and normal supply chains are reactivated, and hopefully prices will come back down again.
You hope.
Yeah. Fertiliser, of course, you know.
That's horrendously expensive now.
Because we use gas to,
use fossil fuels to produce
fertilisers, so...
That may be in one way a good thing, particularly if it's used with the farming practice.
But it adds to the cost of food.
That's the downside of it.
It's just a ripple effect.
It's distribution. We have 30% food waste around the world on average. How do we get that down and distribute food so everyone has something?
They said last year there's enough food grown on the planet to feed the world's population 1.5 times.
So.
With no problems about food.
That's
just everyone eating.
It's the capitalist
who controls
system
the supply and chain and the prices and all the rest of it.
Mark and Julie Coleman.
It's a political...
And even like the oil and all that, we'll be able to afford the fertiliser. The bottom line is our farmers will be able to afford the fertiliser.
But then they'll pass it on to us.
Yeah, but a farmer in Africa who hasn't got the same wealth standard, they're the one who won't have the fertiliser. Because they can't afford it.
The repercussions, food insecurity just exponentially.
But it shouldn't. But it does.
Yeah, but as you say, it's controlled by the few who.
The
bourgeoisie.
And you'd like to think now doesn't work like that, but it does.
It does. That's the system.
And all the money being made out of the war and even the oil, there's tankers of boats, what I call a tank. What do you call a ship that holds oil on?
Oil tanker.
They're just floating around and they often fill these tankers up. They haven't got a market for them yet. They just fill them up waiting to see what the oil prices will do.
Market.
Yeah, spot market. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Then the Iranians may want to charge.
It's in their strait.
$1 million. $1 million, whatever, yarn or whatever it is.
Well, they're saying it's going to be a free for all. Everyone's going to be trying to buy it'd be like a raffle.
Oh, of course.
The Iranians would just sit back. That's a good price. Better. Oh, that's even better.
But who will miss out? The poor.
The poor countries here.
Like Nigeria is an oil rich nation. They're struggling.
Poverty there.
We're a food rich nation.
And we're struggling with food.
Food provider for our people.
As you said, point out the amount of food that gets wasted. One third of the shopping bill just gets chucked away.
Although the Russians supplied Cuba with oil.
Yeah. One ship.
But potentially a second one too.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. And I think Mexico wanted to do the same.
You want to. So what has happened in Venezuela? Because I don't quite understand why have they gone from sort of supplying Cuba, et cetera, and now they've seemed to have done this deal with America, and now America's starting to, refine their heavy oil. Venezuela's not allowed to trade with Cuba. What's going on there?
After they stole it.
Yeah. But what, how does that work so quickly? It's like...
Money going around, people being paid off.
There'll be a few Venezuelans in positions of power and influence.
Yeah, backhanders,
It's
gone very quiet on that front.
Yeah.
What's happened to Maduro and his wife?
Yeah, well, he's still locked up.
And somewhere in New York.
But, because the deputy prime minister took over, Maduro's deputy, and I thought, they'll still be saying something or whatever, but
it's all gone. Either
they are and the media's not reporting it, or it's just gone quiet. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah, it depends what sources you listen to, I suspect.
Yeah.
It would be more like it.
Yeah,
because I think there's still protests going around about the whole Venezuela thing.
And I've got another update. I just remember.
Yeah.
Prime Minister Modi's come to New Zealand in the middle of the year. Haven't decided when. Labor is still waiting for certain clarifications on this India-New Zealand Free Trade Agreement, so they haven't still signed up for it.
Yeah,
and as a footnote on that. Remember I told you a week or so ago there was 12 of 18 performers had disappeared after coming over for a music festival, for Indian Holi festival, and there's 14 are still missing out of the 18. So they've breached their travel visas.
They were over here?
They came over here for this.
And they've disappeared?
Yeah. That was at 26th of March, so whether that's improved, but yeah. Yeah, a bit of a worry. Prime Minister Modi coming, that'd be interesting. India's definitely got a target in New Zealand.
Interesting to see the public reaction, if there's any.
Yeah, it will be.
Given the racism that comes out of certain parties. About brown skinned people.
But let's face it,
But then that's conveniently ignored when money's mentioned, though.
Oh, yeah, that turns.
Indian New Zealand populations is 300,000.
It's high.
And potentially they will, 1% of India's population is 15 million.
Yeah, so there you go.
And New Zealand's population is 5.5 million.
Mm. Yeah,
1% of India's population is 15 million.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
What the reaction to Modi's visit will be.
Yeah.
Will the knee pads come out from our so-called
prominence? And it'll begin close to election time too, so there'll be a bit of political noise about it, I would think,
Yeah.
Exploitation.
Yeah, exactly.
Very much so.
Photo opportunities.
Yeah.
Click.
Yeah, so.
Knee pads go on.
Elbows.
Yeah. Elbows. Yeah. Got anything else? We've got half a minute.
Oh, right. Just the oil shock continues, eh? And this is an opinion piece by Konya Sharp saying that basically, the government really missed out on this. They moved the goalpost. They dropped a clanger.
Yeah.
They promoted oil and fuel powered cars as opposed to electric vehicles.
And not looked seriously at
decisions coming home to roost.
And not looked at biofuel as well. So okay, well that's us and
free public transport.
Yeah, free public transport. And you can catch us on Free FM 89.0 on the website, or just catch our podcast, the Free Left Turn app and podcast.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.